You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Every Monday, it's time to talk politics with our analysts. We're joined today by University of Redlands political science professor Renee Van Vechten, and from Stutzman Public Affairs, Republican political consultant Rob Stutzman. He was deputy chief of staff for then Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Rob and Renee, thank you both very much for being with us. Let's start first with the controversial commutation of the federal sentence against longtime advisor to President Trump, Roger Stone. He pled to lying to an FBI agent during the course of the investigation into Stone's alleged improprieties while serving with the president's team. Your thoughts, Rob, about the president commuting the sentence?
Well, the gradations of corruption from this president sometimes are hard to judge, but I think what was telling about this one is the rebuke it brought from some fellow Republicans. Senator Romney, who obviously will rebuke the president at times, did so by calling it high corruption. And then I thought it was interesting that you get someone like Senator Toomey from Pennsylvania actually put out a press statement as well, saying that he disagreed and that it was inappropriate for the president to do so. His own Attorney General, Bill Barr, was opposed to this type of action. He was on record, I think, a couple weeks ago on this front. So, you know, it is really the height of the abuse of power. And I think we've seen other examples of it. And I don't think it's going to serve the president well. This is how the game plays out in his own mind with his crony, but he can use this type of power, I think, to do something like this.
Why does it not spur even more universal condemnation from Republicans, Rob? Is it the fact that they feel... Do they honestly feel like the prosecution of Stone was political in nature, and so they feel like it really was unfair how he was treated, or is it just they're afraid of criticizing the president?
I think it's the latter. They're afraid of criticizing the president, and after 3.5 years of this administration, Republicans largely don't see an upside politically to doing so, sadly. So there's no benefit to it for many of them. But you do now have an increasing number of incumbent senators up for re-election this year who are being dragged down by the president, like Senator Daines in Montana, for example, or even Senator Cornyn in Texas. And so the time of reckoning may be coming for people like that who have been silent for so long and still cannot find their voice to simply speak out for a rule of law.
Professor Van Vechten, your thoughts on the commutation of Stone's sentence?
Well, it's hard to disagree with what Rob has said. I mean, this is really a very perplexing kind of a decision, and it doesn't really help advance Trump's reelection in any substantial way. This is Roger Stone is a man who lied to Congress repeatedly, lied about how he was communicating with Russians, lied about communicating with the Trump campaign, tampered with a witness. So he was convicted of all of these charges. And so the fact that Trump is actually commuting this sentence actually does not make a whole lot of sense, except perhaps in the context of, as I think Rob has alluded to, Trump's own conception of what justice and law and order is, which doesn't really fit with the American people's sense of what law and order is. Once the jury has convicted someone legitimately, that should really stick. And so here we have this, you know, another example of Trump kind of taking the reins and just going off and doing whatever he feels is going to benefit him down the line, even if that doesn't really comport with reality.
Well, and the irony here is that the president is so quick to criticize these books that have been written about his administration, which point to one of the most consistent themes is the president prizes loyalty above all else, that is the highest regard that he gives someone over professional expertise, over many other things, is the individual loyal to the president. And so the president's been critical of that characterization, but yet here, the only justification that he can really give is that Stone has been a loyal supporter of the president, and that this is the president's way of honoring that.
I would agree with that. I mean, this is, I think, what we might call an emerging politics of the personal, right? This is what Trump embodies. It's a sales strategy. It really comes down to gut level, not even reasoning, but gut level rationale about what I think is going to further my interests. And so it's very much, it's a very egocentric kind of a way of governing. It doesn't have the public interest in mind. And, you know, obviously a clemency or a commutation kind of a power, a pardon power, really should be exercised to protect the national interest. And that is absolutely missing from this kind of a decision.
Although I do think we have to say that we've certainly had some other presidents who've engaged in pardons that didn't have anything to do with the national interest, that had to do with who was a campaign donor and you know, other sorts of things. Although this one certainly would seem to rise to its own level, in that Stone was ready to go to prison tomorrow to start serving his sentence. Rob Stutzman, I wanted to ask you about the president said he is talking with the U.S. Treasury Department about reviewing the tax-exempt status of some colleges and universities that he says have engaged in indoctrinating left-wing politics into students. This seems to be part of the president reinforcing the culture war narrative that he is running strongly on, comments he's made on Twitter and in other, you know, public pronouncements. Do you think that this sort of an approach, even if, you know, you're not going to defund colleges and universities over politics, does this sort of appeal help him with prospective voters?
I don't. The president has completely doubled down on a culture war, and that he sees that as his path to reelection, which is completely nonsensical to many Republican strategists. I talked to many friends last week who are running U.S. Senate races around the country, and they are in great despair by where the president is taking this race for the fall. And now the job for them is to try to cleave their candidates away from the president and this culture war, because it must expand into an economic response to the virus and a public health care response to the virus. Two things that the president isn't talking about. He just keeps trying to distract the public with this culture war. And you can see the results in the polls over the last several weeks. It's having a completely deleterious effect upon the president and his reelect. It makes no sense.
All right. Renee Van Vechten, do you think that there is any political gain in going the culture war route and trying to defend the country, as the president puts it, against a radical agenda, Marxist agenda?
Yeah, the short answer is no. This really shores up his base, if nothing else, but it doesn't draw on the independents who he really needs to put him over that line in November. And you know, the idea that this would somehow, that this decision, particularly with respect to educational institutions, would somehow help him is absolutely ludicrous. You know, in California alone, this is a backdoor way of defunding institutions of higher learning, because in California alone, we rely on about over 200,000 or so international students who bring in, at last count in 2016, it was close to $750 million in non-resident fees. And that was just that was both to private and public institutions. So to cut them off really is hampering institutions and really, in the long term, our economic ability to fill positions of the future. Businesses recognize that. We, as a society, should recognize that.
Professor, what is the reason for this, ban on international students staying in the U.S. or coming to the U.S. to study fully online? As you mentioned, the economic impact is huge for colleges and universities. A number of states, including California, have joined in a lawsuit against the administration on this policy. So what is the justification that the administration is attempting to use for this policy?
Well, this comes through the Department of Homeland Security. There is absolutely no justification that's actually offered in the lines or the guidelines that they've put online. And I've been struggling to find an actual reason that would support this kind of a move.
Is it anti-China? I mean, because so many students, of course, come from China.
That is true, but I think maybe if we put it in the context of his general immigration policy, which is we don't want foreigners, it's us versus them, I suppose it could play into that. I suppose it also plays into the anti-China message that he's been trying to push.
Speaking of which, the Trump administration is, according to officials who have spoken with the Associated Press, says the Trump administration is poised to reject nearly all Chinese maritime claims in the South China Sea. Again, the Associated Press reporting that according to administration officials, the Trump administration will reject nearly all Chinese maritime claims in the South China Sea. Rob Stutzman, I don't know as a practical matter what that means, but clearly that's another shot at the Chinese government.
Yeah, I'll be careful to indicate I don't understand the practical implications of that either. But what I would point to is that the president is trying to project being tough on China, tougher on China than Biden, and use that as an issue. So you get tactics over doctrine. There is no clear doctrine on when it comes to China from this administration. Like, there's no clear doctrine on any type of foreign policy. So how this fits into larger objectives was probably completely unknown. It'll be interesting to watch reaction to this and what the ramifications are. But this is the strategy of this White House is headlines. And so an anti-China headline could very well lead to some type of anti-China policy for a given day without it being connected to any real objective.
Coming up, we'll talk about the economic plan that's been proposed by Joe Biden. We'll find out about that, update you on the search for a running mate. That and more coming up as we talk politics every Monday. Our expert today, Rob Stutzman, Republican political analyst. He was the deputy chief of staff for Governor Schwarzenegger during his administration. And with us, political scientist, professor at the University of Redlands, Renee Van Vechten. We'll continue our conversation in just 1 minute. It's Politics on Air Talk. We're talking Politics on Air Talk with our expert guests, University of Redlands Professor of Political Science Renee Van Vechten and Republican political consultant Rob Stutzman, who worked in a prominent position with Governor Schwarzenegger's administration. Joe Biden has laid out a key plank of his economic agenda for the country. It's dubbed Build Back Better. This was unveiled in a half-hour speech last week. It has to do with funding to deal with the COVID-19 outbreak as well as other stimulus. Professor Van Vechten, let's talk about it. What stood out to you most in the vice president's proposal here?
Well, he's actually outlined a Made in America by American Workers, Bring Back Manufacturing Jobs kind of a message that is completely consistent with where he comes from. But it also has echoes what Trump was saying back in 2016. He wants to protect the right to organize, so he's quite pro-labor in this respect. He also wants to increase the tax rate the corporate tax rate from 21% to, I think, 28%. He wants to bring it back to where it used to be. So I think it does fit into the kind of traditional Democratic candidate plan, which is to raise taxes and to spend it on the middle class in this case.
All right. The Buy American part of this includes a $700 billion investment in procurement and research and development for new technologies, biotech, clean energy, artificial intelligence. This all part of what Joe Biden outlined. And I don't want to be too superficial because there's actually substantive proposal here. But, Professor, your thoughts about Build Back Better as the slogan for this?
Well, I'm sure that it was tested and tested in focus groups. Build Back.
All right.
Sure. The triple B. I don't do a lot of focus group testing, so I assume that it works. But, we'll see if it sticks. I'm not so sure that it's,
It doesn't quite roll off the tongue, but... Rob Stutzman, your critique of the economic plan that was unveiled by Joe Biden last week.
Well, I agree with the way Renee described it. My critique of it would be is that it was rather unremarkable, very safe. I thought it was rather telling that he's being very careful, very much seems to be a candidate playing with the lead. Nothing radical in it at all. Very cleverly appeals to the white working class that he's looking to recapture in the Rust Belt. 4 years ago, we would have called it a MAGA speech, Make American Manufacturing Great. One aspect of it that I thought it went unnoticed, not even sure he highlighted in the speech, but it's a policy he rolled out, which is unemployment reform. And I think this is something to keep an eye on. The Bipartisan Policy Center did some polling about a month ago on the economic impact of COVID, and there's huge desire across the board amongst Republicans, Democrats, Independents for the unemployment system to be reformed. And it's an issue that politicians would be smart to be talking about because it is frustrating tens of millions of American voting households right now on how poorly that system is serving them.
So that's something that could get bipartisan support. There are concerns, I know, within the Democratic Party about how close Joe Biden goes to the progressive economic proposals of a Bernie Sanders or an Elizabeth Warren, those who want to see him really fully embrace those, others who think that would be damaging to his reelection chances, even as President Trump is dealing with a drop in approval. Rob, what do you think? If you were advising him, where should he go on economic policy?
If I were advising him, I would be advising him to stay safely in the middle, to talk in ways that are welcoming to suburbanites, not threatening to them. He does not need to worry about the turnout of his base. Donald Trump's going to turn them out. And from the looks of the polling right now, if he can continue to speak to the center of the country and not frighten particularly suburbanites, he has the chance for a massive electoral victory that would give him quite a mandate.
Renee, do you agree that's where he should hew?
Absolutely. The center is where he's going to be able to capture the people who are in the middle. So it doesn't really behoove him to go too far to the left.
And then what about the argument that depresses Democratic turnout in November because there's so much more energy in the progressive wing of the party?
Well, I think that energy will, if they can't get I'm energized for Biden, they're going to get the energy, which is I am absolutely against Trump. So Trump's reelection. So I think that there will be enough energy to spread around and to turn people out in this particular election.
All right. And what leadership would you like to see from Joe Biden, or do you feel that he is providing it in his campaign on COVID-19?
Well, I think he's actually proposed something interesting, which is this public health jobs corps, a little bit like the Peace Corps, but it would be at home where you would have this plan to rebuild pharmaceutical manufacturing here, onshoring, that sort of thing. He wants to have better assessment of national security risks that are connected to health outbreaks or these pandemic outbreaks. I think that he would do a lot better because he'd actually have a national policy on these sorts of crises and have a way to assess what may happen and project and then make plans, which is something that is just lacking in this current administration.
Yeah. Rob Stutzman, your thoughts about, is there more that Joe Biden should be doing with COVID-19?
I agree with what Renee has said. He has laid out policy proposals, but where the politics of COVID is largely playing out is, which is to me somewhat idiotic, but it is where we're at, which is over this issue on masks. And that has aged very well for Joe Biden, especially as Trump has gave in and wore a mask in public over the weekend. So the setting of the example, the being empathetic, being compassionate, particularly towards victims, I think is a huge advantage for Biden on how Americans perceive that he will continue to manage the disease if he were president.
Rob, what about the Democratic convention coming up yet next month? And, there usually is some sort of an energy, even though these are very carefully staged. They don't really pick the nominee anymore. I haven't for many, many years. But if there is a largely online convention or very limited in-person aspect of it, does that hurt the Biden campaign?
I don't know if it hurts the Biden campaign. I mean, it deprives him of a moment that we're all used to seeing in American politics in terms of that acceptance speech in a full hall. In fact, 4 years ago, he gave a rousing speech at the DNC convention as the outgoing VP. But this goes back to the politics of COVID. There is an opportunity here for the Democrats to demonstrate responsibility on how the world should be behaving during this time. And it is going to be a great issue of contrast to the Trump campaign, who it's not clear they'll be able to do it, but is still trying to move ahead with some type of in-person gathering.
All right. Professor Van Vechten, quick thought on that?
Absolutely. Be responsible.
All right.
There's not a place where you can do that.
Thank you so much. From the University of Redlands, Professor of Political Science, Renee Van Vechten, and Rob Stutzman, Republican political consultant, a former deputy chief of staff to Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Fresh Air with Terry Gross is coming up next, and Terry's guest is Matthew Rhys, the Welsh actor who's starring as Perry Mason in HBO's origin story to the Perry Mason character. Rhys also co-starred in the FX series The Americans, playing a KGB spy living in the U.S. during the Cold War. Fresh Air coming up next, and then BBC NewsHour at 1. Have a good afternoon.